Half, Whitey, Rammer. This is RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
Ultimately, I just want them to play their game. They're here because they're great players. They just need to remember that and play their game. There's lots of advice flying around left and right everywhere, but ultimately now I think they're comfortable with the golf course. A couple of rules from the captains on how to play the course. And if they do that, just play their game. And I believe that's how we're going to get the most out of the young players. And we need that to happen.
Well, that was Adam Scott yesterday. It was great to have him at the RSN Christmas party. That's what it sounded like. That's where he was in the background. But he was victorious and he was celebrating a fantastic day for the internationals on day one of the President's Cup at Royal Melbourne. He and Ben Ann got Bryson and Tony Finau's measure yesterday, 2-1 in match 3 of day 1. But the internationals have a 4-1 lead, the worst ever result for the US on a day 1 of the President's Cup. And I reckon it would have been something to bring a big smile to the face of Ian Baker Finch, who's one of the best analysts and performers in golf these days on the broadcast circuit. He's with us on the Breakfast Club. Ian, good morning.
Good morning to you all. How are you today?
We are terrific, mate, and we always love you on our program, so we thank you for that again during a President's Cup particularly. But being someone who knows this pretty intimately, this format, what a day for the internationals. How was it from your perspective?
Oh, fantastic. I was out there all day. I caught up with Ernie and the boys early in the morning at the team room, and we had a little drive around and G'd up the crowd on the practice tee and around the first tee. So really, really exciting. But the crowds were still very respectful of the US team, apart from Patrick, where they gave him a few boos and a few lines of disrespect, if you will, on the first tee. But from there on, it was all guns blazing, and the everything that happened yesterday was just phenomenal. To finish up the day 4-1's a bonus. You know, all they were trying to do was win each segment. You know, if they can win by half a point each time, they go in on Sunday with a good lead. So.
Yep.
Real good bonus yesterday, that's for sure.
How important for the actual event itself was it for the internationals, considering the recent domination of the US, to have the internationals have such a good day and really throw this tournament wide open, this event wide open? From your perspective, how important was that?
Extremely important. Extremely important for this particular event this week to get everyone G'd up. Everyone's so excited. It's going to be spectacular out there today, the atmosphere. It's not over yet. We've got a great team to beat. And I loved hearing Adam's words there that you just played. Just go play your game. If you weren't a great player, you wouldn't be here, meaning our team, some of the less well-known names. So if they just go play their game, they're good enough to compete. And they proved that to us all yesterday. So really important for the event. Really important that we win this event this time again here at Royal Melbourne. Moving forward, because it was losing a little bit of its luster because we'd been beaten so badly in the past. So a great start, but it's not over yet. They've got to keep doing what they did yesterday.
Now, Ian, you talked to us about how you made the conscious decision. You didn't want to be part of the broadcast this year. You wanted to be out there soaking it all up. And as you said, you've been out with Ernie yesterday. Do you feel you've made the right decision? And how enjoyable is it for you to be more part of it than actually be stuck in a broadcast booth?
I definitely made the right decision. I know everyone in the broadcast has put on a good show, and I know over in the States, all of my friends over there have said it's been fantastic to watch, and Royal Melbourne and the Sand Belt is the winner in all of this. The world gets to see how great our golf courses are. And for me to be able to go spend time in the clubhouse and catch up with so many of the people in the world of golf and to just be around, you know, I went into a couple of the marquees and did a little bit of commentary in the background as players would come past, you know, there on the 10th and again at the 16th. It was just really good fun to feel like I was a part of the event, like everybody else that's out there for the weekend.
Ernie's continually spoke about the matchups and the importance of those matchups going into this event. Can you take us into some of the metrics of how these matchups have come about? Because obviously it worked perfectly yesterday.
Yeah, he went a little bit more scientific, if you will, with finding out exactly what not just personalities and likes and dislikes and things like that, but how the players had performed in the past and also how they played the game. They went right through the stats kind of like what the European Tour did last year with their Ryder Cup team, and came up with some pairings. When I saw the pairings for yesterday, I thought, oh, that's a strange one. Oh, I hadn't thought of that one. You know, it wasn't what I would have done just knowing the players and their personalities. And it's worked really, really well. And Ernie is just such a great leader of men. He is such a well-liked person and very, very capable. Everyone calls him the Big Easy, and he's got a great attitude, but he leaves no stone unturned. He's a very hard worker and diligent, and he's been a great captain so far.
And the other one I really noticed yesterday is that when a player or the team won a hole, you could see the internationals really trying to get the crowd involved. Was that also something that was spoken about before the day's play to really get the crowd to try to whip him into a frenzy?
Yeah, definitely, because the Australian, we talked about this last time, the Australian fans are just so grateful to have this tournament here and to see all of these great players. They're going to clap, even when the player's off the first tee, they clap the Americans as they walked off and hit great tee shots. They're not going to boo one team and cheer for the other. They know the American players a lot better than half of our team. So we had to get people understanding that, hey, it's okay to clap for the Americans, but cheer for us, you know, really, really get behind our team. And I think the crowds really did that yesterday. We don't need to disrespect the Americans. They're all good guys and it's a great team. We just need to really get behind our guys.
We've commented a lot, Ian, about Tiger Woods and his leadership, and it's obviously the way he plays and this unique situation where he's captain but also playing. But from an international perspective, I've really been impressed with Adam Scott, the way that he's almost embraced this leadership role in the international team. He played extremely well yesterday. He tried to get the crowd involved. He's almost our Greg Norman of the President's Cup team from all that those years ago when we won on the Sandbelt.
Yeah, definitely. Greg was instrumental in that team win back in 98 under Peter Thomson, but everyone did their little part, and I think that's exactly what you're saying here with Adam. And I would have liked to have seen an Aussie team yesterday, but as it turned out, that wasn't the case. You know, they did a great job today. We've done the same thing. We've got the Aussies out there in separate teams. You know, we've got Adam and Hideki leading the way. So I just think the start of the show yesterday, when we're all out there on the first tee and they brought back some of that 98 team and they showed a lot of history of Peter Thomson and that team, that was really something special for this team to see and try and emulate, you know. And I think Ernie is doing the same sort of thing as Peter and doing a great job.
It's so fascinating watching golf when they're playing in teams and where they're actually in a situation where they're relying on each other and they're trying to stand up for each other. And we saw one of the youngsters, Neiman, who battled early with his nerves. It is fascinating to see how they cope when it's a completely different set of circumstances, even though they're still hitting the white ball around.
Yeah, and then you've got to deal with not just the nerves and the pressure of everyone, you know, wanting you to do so well and beat the other team. You've got this golf course that is just fantastic. It's a tough test. You can't relax at any point. You know, even a 10-foot putt for birdie, if you just get a little rush of blood, you can hit a 10-foot by in a heartbeat. So there's just so much going on. And in team competition, that's what makes these sorts of things so special. It's just that added bit of, oh, boy, I don't want to let my mate down. I don't want to let the team down. I don't want to look silly in front of all of these people on TV around the world and all of those extra little pressures. It's hard to keep that at bay and just go out and play golf. And as Adam said earlier, these guys, they're here because they're great players. Just play your best. Don't say sorry if you hit a bad shot. Just go hit a good one next time. And they did that extremely well yesterday, and hopefully they can do it today in the foursomes.
So historically, the foursomes have always been where the Americans have excelled in this event. Do you see any advantage for the internationals today in any of the matchups?
I think the Americans have a huge advantage in that they play the Ryder Cup in the ultimate years when we don't. So most of these teams have played together before. They've played under extreme pressure in the Ryder Cup. We don't play foursomes golf very often, you know, if at all. Only that one event in America now where Mark Leishman and Cam Smith partnered. And then, of course, at the World Cup last year, where Leash and Smithy were second place. So the foursomes is a difficult one. Once again, just go play your best. Don't get sort of overthinking how it's going to get done, or don't get too down on yourself if you hit a couple of bad shots or miss a couple of short putts or whatever. Never show you down. Always stay up. Always stay confident. And know that your partner is trying his absolute hardest, as are you, the whole way around. So you got to forget about the matchups as much as you can and just go and play your golf the best you can. And once again, Ernie's chosen them as scientifically and as with as much thought into the process as possible.
Ian Baker-Finch has joined us on The Breakfast Club, wrapping up day one of the President's Cup and previewing day two. You mentioned the matchups for day two. Five new pairings for the internationals. Ernie's been busy with the computer overnight. And the US have got three same ones, similar ones from yesterday, their pairings. The influence of Tiger on being able to absorb all the attention, because he's a phenomenal athlete and player and competitor, as we well know. But went out first yesterday, I imagine, to absorb a fair bit of the heat. He goes out fourth today with Justin Thomas after their win yesterday. Is it important that for the other US team that he absorbs a lot so they can just go about their business, do you think? Do you reckon that's a factor in the mindset of the US team?
There's so much. And everyone has a different worry or a different thought. That's a good point, that the captains absorb a lot of that. And I liked what Tiger did with keeping a couple of teams together. They've obviously gone and said, hey, we just gel so well. I know we didn't do well today, but we want to go do it again tomorrow. Or they may have been teams in the past. So we have a team that's totally new. We don't have any history of who played with him, apart from, you know, Adam and Leash and have played a little bit together, or Hideki and Louis, you know, those sorts of things. And Louis's been fantastic, of course, in the past. But the other guys, there is no history. So Ernie's got to go with his gut. He's got four great assistant captains that are wonderful players and major champions there to help guide. So I just know that they've put so much into this, and they've gone with what they think are the best possible teams to continue the trend from yesterday.
Now, Ian, before we let you go, just a bit earlier in the show, we were talking about the change of golf clubs and technology and what we used to use on the golf course. And we were talking about your famous, I think it was a 3-wood in the playoff at the Masters, the Australian Masters, all those years ago, where it wasn't necessarily controversial, but you used a club that not too many had seen to hit that shot into that playoff hole. How well can you remember that?
Well, I remember, it's funny, you remember so many of the good times and the playoff wins. Forget all the playoff losses I had, which was far more than the win. but I do remember that in regulation play, the wind had switched a little bit, and everyone that had been hitting an iron off that 17th tee had needed a wood for their second shots into that green. And I thought, if I can get a 3-wood down there around the corner and hit a mid-iron in, I'll have the advantage. So I sort of took it on from the tee, thinking I'll get it a long way down with this club and I'll have a better advantage, which is what happened. I hit a 5-iron in there from 194 yards and hit it in stiff to make the birdie to win. So sometimes you have to gamble on certain shots, and other times you have to rely on your putting or on your approach.
Because at the time, the 3-metal, I think they used to call it, was not something that had been used a lot. And I think a lot more people were quite keen to go and get one after you played that shot in the playoff.
Yeah, it was one of the clubs that I had in, especially for that course, because I couldn't get it in the air very well. It was very hot and had a graphite shaft, and it would go a long way. It actually was probably as far as my driver would go. But yeah, after that was 1988. A long time ago now. But everyone was hitting metal 3-woods, and it became very, very popular around about that time.
Yeah, there you go.
17 of Huntingdale. I've always hated that hole. I just cannot.
It was always a tough hole, wasn't it?
Yeah, I just cannot get near it. And I've got some issues in my swing, full stop. But that hole just drives me absolutely bananas. But I do remember that vividly now that you bring it up, that 17th at Huntingdale in the playoff. Always great to chat to you, Ian. We know that you've got plenty on during a week like this, and we absolutely appreciate every second you give us on The Breakfast Club. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Thanks a lot, guys. Love being with you, and go to the internationals.
Absolutely.